The Boeing 747 was the first ever jumbo jet and took flight in 1970. It is very large.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual on this party cast, we've got Pernell, we've got Chris, we've got Tim, and we've got Brooke. How's everyone doing?
Joe still hasn't learned the lesson to start the recording when we all join the call.
Oh, no, it was recording. I just didn't want to keep any of it.
None of it was good.
There's a big difference, Pernell. Big difference.
Fantastic content. Give me a shake.
Do you want to relive the conversation? Do you really want to go back and start talking about Office 365?
No.
Let's talk about M&Ms. Let me stop. Okay. I like. When I say gummy bears, where's your favorite gummy bear? Because I realize
the ones in my mouth.
Are you actually eating gummy bears right now?
No, I'm not eating them right now. Why would I be eating gummy bears right now? I'm doing a show.
So Tim named the best gummy bears. I agree with that.
What did I don't want to eat.
I sang the song from the show.
Haribo?
No, the Gummy Bears theme song from Disney.
Oh, yikes. Okay, I don't even know.
That's very old Disney.
That is old Disney.
I mean, well, your age, we had a dancing gummy bear who drank gummy juice and bounced everywhere.
No, here and there and everywhere. I mean, I just recited the words.
I picture that was beyond compare. Joe, you don't belittle their adventures. They did some grandeur shit.
I had that shit on DVD. Don't fucking come at me as if I don't appreciate my gummy bears.
You had any reason?
A modern format?
I don't know what's going on. Chris, what were you saying?
I'm just lighting a tiny candle in this dark night of the soul. No, what I was saying is that the reason I didn't remember the Gummy Bears show really is because they never had an NES game.
So it might as well not have existed.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought there was a game, no?
No. I don't believe so.
Did every other Disney Afternoon cartoon get a game?
Probably. Hang on here.
Hang on's a different game. That's a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He had a game. Tailspin had a game. Darkwing Duck had a game.
Yeah. Well, Gummy Bears, I think, was a little bit before that.
They were, but when Disney Afternoon started, I think they had a short moment in it, or at least some period of it, but they didn't come along with it. Like, they were, like, maybe they fell asleep.
Capcom did come out with a Gummy Bears Disney's Afternoon Adventure game, but it was for the Bandai Revolution, Bandai Chaos, and Bandai Pocket Turbo.
Those are actual machines.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows what those are.
Yeah. Game systems, those apparently.
Memorable.
Yeah,
machines.
The Bandai Turbo Zone.
I don't understand that at all.
The Bandai gibberish.
What was the name of it? The Bandai what?
Hang on. The Bandai Revolution, the Bandai Chaos, and Bandai Pocket Turbo.
Oh, was it? What? This is Japan stuff.
I don't know.
If it's
a Bandai system, it's probably Japanese.
Yeah. Makes sense. Oh, that just looks like a little Genesis.
So I guess maybe that is the one then. Like, every time I think of a cartoon that released in that era, it had a video game. Like, the fact that Bonkers had a video game, but between Bonkers and Marsupilami, they were the ones I most expected to get one.
Yeah, they were 16-bit, though.
Still count. Counts.
Pernell, did you know Marsupilami has a new game out?
Yeah, but that's not the real Marsupilami. Isn't it like some weird knockoff?
No, it's the real Marsupilami. It just has a redesign.
Oh, so it's got Disney in the credits. Like,
no,
you read the credits.
It has nothing to do with Disney. Marsupilami has nothing to do with Disney.
God, stop saying Marsupilami.
Okay, then you tell us, Tim.
No, what?
You can say
what do you want to talk about, Tim?
No, I don't want to say it. I don't know.
Goof Troop, that was also Super Nintendo, 16-bit era. I think the newest one that came out on the NES was Darkwing Duck.
I like the episode.
Yeah, well, Rescue Rangers 2, I think, or DuckTales 2 would have been the last.
But those properties, though. I mean, the last show that was represented, the newest one. Because Darkwing Duck was after Tailspin, right?
My favorite episode was the one where Cipollone came through a portal and spent time with him in Duckburg or whatever they call it. Mallard City. Quackington.
What? Squat- Cape Canaveral.
Squawkburg. That's what it's called, yeah. Yeah.
So, Brooke, how are you doing?
You know, I'm just doing great. I'm here. I cracked my cold one open with the boys. I'm just having a great time.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Disney afternoon cartoon?
I didn't really, you know, I didn't really grow up with the Disney Channel in the afternoon, so I think that's what I'm missing here. I saw stuff later, but...
I mean, it was on network television when it was initially coming out, but...
Oh, dang. Yeah, I don't know how I missed that. I mean, I got some Dragon Ball Z growing up later on.
Yeah.
And I can't really remember a lot of, like, right-after-school stuff.
That was the primo era of, like, children's entertainment, where you got home to cartoons and you got excited to wake up on Saturdays for cartoons. And people underestimate how big that shit was.
I remember the Saturday morning rush. Those were good times.
Like, there was a period, I remember when the Saturday morning cartoons were going to premiere, and they shut down freaking TGIF Fridays to have a special just to talk about what cartoons were coming out the very next
week.
Like, you know, these kids were putting them to bed, but the parents let them stay up an extra hour because they want to talk about new cartoons brought to you by Steve and that kid from Full House. It was great. I miss those days. Because, you know, cartoons just get dumped onto Netflix, and you watch them all in one sitting, and you're done.
Speaking of, I didn't watch the new Animaniacs. Did anyone?
I watched just a couple episodes of it. It was surprising. It was good.
That was good.
Yeah,
I want to check.
Yeah,
that
they
out.
Did. They did another season.
Same style of humor. Or did it change up a bit?
Oh no, it's the same as what you remember.
I gotta say though, part of me feels like I'd rather they brought. I mean, don't get me wrong, all is better than nothing. Or I'd rather have all, but if it was one or the other, I feel like I'd rather they brought Tiny Toons back.
I did like Tiny Toons.
Such fond memories of that show. I was like, we're doing like a Rhythm and Pixels episode one day, and I don't even know why. It was just like a random line that came up that a submitter brought in, and it just reminded me of a rap song they did on Wander's 80s and MTV Raps episodes they did. And it was just the weirdest thing. People were like, what the hell is this guy talking about? I'm like, yo, it's a rap song, but sprung by a flea, a tiny flea. And then the one guy was like, it's this guy right here. And everybody started listening to it. It holds up. Like, the show is just...
I have no idea where this is going.
All I know is that this show is now owned by Disney.
Is it?
We said too much.
Yeah, I guess we are owned by Disney. Shit.
How much did they spend for us?
I know, like $20.
How many in the low millions?
Negatives.
I know, negative. We bring value and community to their illustrious, you know, franchises.
Speaking of value, we should talk about games, shouldn't we?
Oh,
it has value?
I guess, yeah.
I mean, they're supposed to. That's, you know, we tell people if these games are worth what they're asking.
Touche.
It's really important work we're doing, so it's the Lord's work.
So, Purnell, you ready to start?
Maybe, sort of. I don't know.
All right, first game to talk about is a preview of The Waylanders, developed and published by Gato Studios, releasing February 2nd out of Steam Early Access for $39.99. Slip the Buns, a Fate in This Party-based RPG filled with Celtic myth and historical legend. Discover thrilling adventure alongside mortal companions and immortal allies as you explore the world of The Waylanders. Purnell, you're taking an early look at it this week, and we're going to revisit it in another week or so after it's out of release and on its feet. What are your thoughts of it, your first impressions?
I think right now, and this is something I almost hope the dev hears, because it might make things a little easier than me just beating my head into the wall until the blood starts to spew. This game is by design, right? What I gather with is that the combat is built around the idea that you get a variety of different party members that can fit into a variety of different classes. You have like rangers who are primarily skilled in range attacks, and the fighter who's good at melee attacks, and like the defender, like the defender type is good at like tanking damage. You know, the usual tropes. There's no like standout new classes in this game, which isn't a big deal. I'm fine.
Drop it, bitch!
Each of those characters can learn up to like about 8 different abilities. And as far as like, think like Diablo wheel style, where it's like, okay, once I have the abilities to tell them set up, I can kind of quick key them to attack enemies. These are all standard things too. Now, there's two things that get weird and where the weird challenge came in for me, where I'm like, well, I'm not really feeling it as much as I want. So, the first thing,
quick shout out to Hazy JT for dropping those 20 bitties. Thank you.
What up?
You must really like the Waylanders. Shit.
Yes, it's all about the Waylanders.
So the big change up slash gimmick to this game that I noticed in the gameplay of it is something called formations, which isn't really something called. Everyone knows what damn formation is. But in the context of this game, formations are a scenario where you can take a character who has learned one such formation, make him the lead character, as in the one you're currently controlling of the party, and then you can select other characters that are with you to be a part of that formation. So if you have a party of five people, you can add anywhere from one to all five of them to the same formation. Then you activate it, and all the characters kind of form up into one big squad. And this is a temporary thing. It doesn't last forever. But when they're formed up, their hit points kind of combine to like one massive hit point pool. Their stats go up a bit. Pardon me, and all of their actual like change, their attacks change based on the formation itself. So it's almost like one new super unit. That I think is kind of cool too. But it got weird when actually came time to actually engage in combat, because normally in games like this, when they're action based or whatever, especially if they're squad related, you can kind of give characters, you know, commands, trying to maybe pull some enemies in to strategically plan out how the battle's going to take place, you know, to not get overwhelmed or anything. But every time I did anything, it just became a matter of, you know, spit on the ground and hope for the best, because everybody's coming and all my guys are going and you can't really pull anybody. It's just everybody comes at you and you're just like squabbling for it. And there is a means where you can kind of stop, you know, combat for a bit to get your bearings. You press like the X button on a controller, and it stops the game while you make some strategic decisions. You can say, for example, I want to put, you know, this piercing attack and attack this target, and I want to make this guy do this thing. But there's two weird issues I have there too. And it's like, one, it's a little bit cumbersome, and that the way the wheel works, which also, by the way, the tutorial that explains this explains it using like a cross pad, but you don't use the cross pad. Did you have to use like the right thumbstick to select these things? Like, it shows like buttons that don't correspond to what I'm supposed to do. So it was like harder for me to get adjusted. Like, okay, this is how I make these changes and these decisions. So it took me a while just to get used to that. And of course, it had me thinking, is this old man brain or is this actually a concern? But I just have to state it in advance. Like, I am an old guy, but you know, I'm still competent. Damn it. I still eat my oats. But the way the game is, like, it's like, you know, I select all these commands and do things. I'll activate the bell so it goes back in. And lots of the time, sometimes I can't really tell if my guys are doing what I set them up to do. Like, are they even activating the commands I told them to activate? The queue might just disappear and show that these moves were accomplished, but I don't notice if they did anything or not. It's the strangest thing. It's a matter of, it boils down. I mean, admittedly, I will say difficulty choice, because, you know, being me doing a review, I have to note the difficulty I chose. They have like five difficulties, and
your
I chose
flex,
the one.
But okay.
No, it's not a fair question. It boils down to, it's the idea of like saying, like, hey, maybe the reason that you're having such difficulty is because the game is, you just really had it a hard set. And if that's the thing that they would tell me, then that's cool. I understand. Maybe.
No, what difficulty are you on?
The one title is actually called Waysider Difficulty. It's like the one they said the game was meant to be played at, like in the description of the difficulty. So I was like, I'll take that one. But if you were to look at the difficulty on the sliding scale they present, it's like 4 out of 5. So I don't know. It could be, despite them saying this is what they want it to be, it might still just be, this is some hard shit. And that's why we put it as far down as we did. But I just wanted to mention that, because if I'm making a dialogue where I'm outright saying I'm getting my ass beat, I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong, quote unquote, they could just come back and say, the difficulty's too freaking high, set it down, just be humble and set it back a bit. And that's a fair statement. Otherwise, I wouldn't note it, unless I'm doing really well, because then that's a humble brag. But so, I will say things I did like off the bat, though, even for as far as I did get in the game. I like the writing for the characters. I feel as though there's like the right amount of humor in a lot of what they say. And there's a fair bit of personality in the dialogue the characters speak. They don't feel robotic in any way, as far as I'm concerned, at least. So I can't speak for everybody, but I honestly did not mind listening to what the main characters had to say when I went up to them. I wasn't just mashing the button to get them to shut up.
Yeah, I find that a lot in RPGs where I don't care about what characters say anymore. I just want to get through the conversations. So when a game has actual, like, interesting, notable conversations, it deserves some praise.
100%, because I can tell you this, like, and it's only come up recently because, you know, people have been asking, like, what do you think of SMT5? Shin Megami Tensei 5. And one of the main complaints people will have is, like, poor story, great experience with gameplay and combat, right?
I would argue that, but go on.
I mean, so, like, I get that people might say that. I don't have that personal belief, but I get why some people would say that. But when it comes to a good deal of RPGs I've played in the last, like, 10 years or so, I feel like the majority, not all of them, because there's been some that have bucked this trend, but the majority of them, I'll play them, and I'm more concerned about the combat and the exploration and the strategy involved, because the narrative I lose interest in the narrative almost freaking immediately. It's like, oh, heroes saving the world. You have a talking animal person, and you got a robot who's looking for a heart, you know, the normal bullshit. And you just kind of don't care anymore. So you almost tune it out. It could be jadedness. It could just be, you know, you've seen it before. It could just be bad writing sometimes, or it could be Kimco. I don't know. I mean,
there are a lot of very mechanic focused RPGs in recent years.
Yeah, like, and honestly, like, I like mechanic focus. Like, if it's me saying, hey, like, it could be even better, be like, I don't care about the narrative per se, but I know that guy with the horns kicked my ass 2 towns ago. It's payback time, and I feel invested in beating his ass, not because I'm saving the world, because I'm angry and I want to win. That's fine. But it's better if I come across a game where I'm like, hey, these characters are pretty interesting. I like what they have to say. I like the guy who's really sarcastic. I want to see where he's going. You know, like, I'm okay with this. And I feel like this game did a good job with the character dialogue and the interactions and the like. So I think it deserves praise for that. And I also, I'm almost say the graphics were particularly, like, you know, explosive or anything, but I didn't really find them, like, I didn't cringe at them. I was like, hey, I can appreciate this.
But, did not make me vomit. Perfect.
5 out of 5. No puking here, baby. But, like, I was okay with the visuals too. Like, I mean, there was, like, one character whose, like, face got a little weird as far as, like, how she contorted it and whatever. I don't know what that was about, but for the most part, the characters' faces were fine, and I liked seeing them, so I was okay with that too. But for the most part, I mean, like, I want to give it a little bit more time, but at the same time, it's like, the way the combat's been treating me right now and the experience with all the battles, it's like, it's more pulling teeth than having fun.
No.
And that could be the issue that would ultimately sink the full review. But like I said, I'm going to, as you know about me, I'm not a liar on this front, and that's why we're pushing it back. I want to give it a full, fair shake, which means I want to put more time into getting it right. So we'll see how it goes.
And maybe bump the difficulty down a notch and see how it handles you or how it treats you.
The difficulty after the game, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, he's pointing at the screen, like, there's the title right there. So I don't know. But I mean, if it comes down to it for the sake of the review and I have to do it, then so be it. But right now, woof.
Now, as it stands, $40 is the release price on this. What are your thoughts for now?
I'll give it a try, because other people might be more competent in combat than me. But we'll see how it goes, because trust me, if I feel like I got a handle on it and I'm still not having it, I have no shame saying, it's not my fault, it's the game's fault. I earned this. But for now, I don't feel confident in making that statement. Still more me than the game.
All right, well, next game to talk about is Not For Broadcast, developed by Not Games, published by Tiny Build, released out of Steam Early Access on January 25th for $24.99. The National Nightly News is live, and you're the brains behind the scenes. Beep the swears, keep the cameras on the celebs, and keep the audience hooked in this darkly comedic game of televised chaos. Chris, tell us about your time with Not For Broadcast.
Oh, boy, Not For Broadcast. Okay.
Am I going to have to beep you on this?
Oh, yeah, you better. You got a 2-second delay that,
oh, man, I don't have that much time.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck it, whatever.
Beep! Oh, damn it.
So close.
Okay, so, yes, this is a game where you do play a former janitor named Alex, who has been promoted to basically a one-man production team. Actually, I say man, but they did take care to make sure that all the characters that are in the first-person part of the story are gender-neutral. So you're Alex, who is married to Sam, who has a sibling named Chris. You know, it's that kind of thing. All gender-neutral names.
Hey, that works.
No, it's great. But yeah, that's getting ahead. So you are a former janitor turned one-person producer who has the control panel at your fingertips, and now the news is going to come on, and you basically have to... It's one of those kind of things where it's a juggling game. Funny enough, the first game I thought of was Night Trap on the Sega CD, which is the first game to receive, I think, a rating or something? It's one of the games that they created the rating system out of because people were so scared because it featured video.
It was
video.
So spoopy.
Yeah, and this game is definitely in that tradition because the entire content of the game besides those controls is like full motion video filmed with actors and like, you know, in a comedic way, but it is all real. This game actually received the Guinness World Record for most recorded full motion video footage for a game at 42 something hours.
Oh, geez.
There's a ton of content in this game. And actually, as a consequence, it is a 60 gigabyte download. So I struggled with getting this one all in there initially, but finally I was able to, you know, get it to.
Oh, what would you do if you had to like tackle Forza?
Oh, I don't wouldn't.
Fair.
I'd be like, I'll take this on a console, please. Thank you. But yeah, this is a Steam game that is 60 gigabytes to download. So fair warning there. That might kick some people out of being interested in it initially. But anyway, once you get into it, basically your job is to man some controls that get increasingly complex as the game goes on. But what you have are the which screen is going to show on the television kind of thing. So basically there's four cameras set up and you swap between the cameras in real time. So if somebody's talking, you want the camera that is pointed to them on at that time. And then when someone else talks, you want that camera. Or maybe there's a camera that shows both people at the same time in an interview format. And you know, you've seen the news, you know how it works. And so you're operating that in real time, either by clicking with the mouse, or you can actually just press 1 through 4 on the keypad. And then there is the sensor button, which is very popular. So because it's a live news show, and you're dealing with unhinged comedic characters, they will drop many curses. And just depending on the scene, it could be like every few seconds. And you have to... Yeah, you have a 2-second delay between what you get to see and what the audience eventually gets to see. And so you have to basically get it at that time. Now, fortunately, they have like an actual spectrogram, like, or whatever you call it. Like, you can see the waveform and they'll highlight the curse in red for you automatically so that you can actually nail it there. A little bit like a rhythm game, you know?
That's pretty cool.
It's like, yeah, as it's passing by, you just hold down the space bar or click the sensor button and in the amount of time that curse lasts, which sometimes can be quite lengthy because this game is bonkers. And I'll get to that in a minute. We're getting through the boring control stuff right now because this is all the game is, really. And then you have different things that happen, such as like before the news program starts, you select these VHS tapes, because this is the 80s, that have your commercials on them, and you get to pick the commercials, and that becomes very important at a certain point in the game. So, and they're all, and you know, you have to press play on the commercial at the right time, you have to change the scene, all that stuff. So that's kind of like the basics of it. There's also a little adjuster knob with another little kind of visual display. I don't remember what it's called, but it's basically like kind of a... you have to pay attention to it because if the white line separates from your like kind of other line, and it changes depending on the scene as well. But basically, you're supposed to like keep it all like straightened out. Otherwise, there's interference, and then interference makes for bad television. So it could be something like you need to move it up and down to like match this other thing that's moving up and down, or you need to like actually navigate like these things that are passing by, almost like the world's slowest shooter. And that's actually pretty cool, too. And depending on your difficulty, they may throw all three of them at you at the same time. So it's very much about juggling these activities that are very handily like assigned to different parts of the keyboard, actually. I was pretty impressed. So that's that. So the actual content of the game, I don't want to get too much into spoilers, but this game has an actual story. Certain events like transpire. It's very political based. It's this weird made up reality, right? Where I like to imagine that it's what like libertarians believe is actually true. Like,
God.
So there's this authoritarian leftist government that takes over and suddenly has all the power. So now the government can control every aspect of your life. But they redistributed all the wealth of like the super rich. And now everybody gets like this giant paycheck. But they also give up like all semblance of personal freedom. Right. So like the really...
This is
you know,
the future
dumb
liberals want, dude.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like the future we have now without the checks.
Exactly, yeah. But it's like, you know, it's far enough removed to where it's like it is satire, but also it's alternate universe. It's very much like, and the game itself really struggles not to have a position. There's, you know, it's basically kind of a both sides are bad situation. And, you know, it only briefly like kind of correlates with like real life events. It's more like when you hear like the idle ramblings of like an older person, then that's kind of like where they went with this game. It's like, what if that was real? That would be funny. And so they made it real and they made it funny. You also have like your unhinged people that work at the news thing. I really like the main anchor. He's like a 21-year-old guy. Like I'm apologies if he's actually older, but I don't know. He seems way too young, but also he really plays the part super well. And everybody's British too, so that's also amazing. But yeah, like, you know, you're basically, the thing is that as you go through the game, you suddenly realize, and oh, by the way, between news reels, like it basically gives you a kind of visual novel, well, without the visual part, I guess it just kind of gives you a text-based assessment and like tells you the story of your life between the show. So, you know, troubles with your spouse because of work and also because of the political situation. You know, your son might literally be joining the Nazis, things like that. Yeah. So it's like all these, and all of it like amounts to like, they're like, well, what do you do? And then you have like multiple choice answers, like up to four of them. And they actually will drive you towards an ending. So, because it's the game's got multiple endings. But the other thing is that as you realize how the government is affecting your life, you suddenly are kind of pointed to the fact that being in control of the news and being in control of what people see means that you can actually make choices that will affect like the political situation. You can actually choose like a bad picture of a pundit or something who's talking. You can cut away from somebody who's making a point to, you know, go to somebody who's making a bad point. Like you can actually manipulate the world around you using television editing. And then this game becomes a thing where it's like, it was like this goofy, like sketch comedy, like whatever. And now it's like, you're actually issuing propaganda. So
this is Fox News, the video game.
Kind of, yeah. It's, again though, it's not right wing. It just so happens that that it's framed in this like, you know, socialist takeover kind of deal. But you know, whatever. Once again, if you kind of like just immerse yourself in this world's idea of what politics are, then it becomes fun and understandable. If you don't try to like compare it to like, you know, real life where it gets complicated. but yeah, so that's kind of what it is. It's like, it's one of those games. And of course this is that same, what was the burger game that Brooke reviewed a while ago?
Happy's Humble Burger Farm. I hope you enjoyed my stutter.
That's okay. I appreciate that you remembered the title, cause I certainly didn't.
I love it.
like same publisher, so it's like kind of that same thing. It starts off really goofy and weird, and then eventually becomes like serious and like actually thought provoking and possibly even sinister. So like that, I really enjoyed that part of it. And again, it's 42 hours plus of like real footage. So there is so much in this game to experience. It's separated into three full episodes, which incorporate, you know, like many days of broadcast and things like that. And, you know, different like kind of storylines and stuff. And then there's two smaller ones that they had to film because everybody was in lockdown, including one that is where everybody's locked down, but they're locked down because some children's toys have gained sentience and are out for blood. So everybody's now locked in their homes.
Awesome.
Again, this game is bizarre.
Oh, God. It sounds like it's a good one, despite the file size. The price is $24.99. What are your thoughts on it?
God, I really want everybody to experience this one. Again, the gameplay, it's good. The gameplay is good. It's not like... it can be pretty challenging, of course. If you mess up too much, you get fired and then you have to start over. But what the real meat of this game is just enjoying the content. It is hilarious. And again, some of it is thought-provoking and sincere. But watching these actual actors go through this basically weird-ass sketch comedy that doesn't have a punchline because it's supposed to be, you know, they're trying to play it straight. Yeah, it's just such a cool experience. Oh, and by the way, you get to watch like all of, not only the show that you edited at the end of the stage, you can watch the show without having to like worry about controlling it. You can also watch the rushes, that is to say all the unedited footage that you edited out. So you can watch all the content without actually, you know, having to worry about playing a game in the meantime. It's also got some great accessibility options. I won't go into too much detail there because I've already gone through the boring part. but it's got
anything
many
notable?
Levels. Yeah, it's got some colorblindness features, which is great. And it has like four difficulty levels, including one that's just called story, where it's basically no challenge. You can just get through the game. You know, nothing like nothing. You can't mess it up enough, basically.
I can try.
Yeah, you can try. You can certainly try. And yeah, like just different things like that. It's got a lot of content warnings because the game does get dark. Although, you know, they still pixel out all the nudity and stuff because there actually is nudity that you have to cut away from. Because, you know, the story, it's so ridiculous. Because the rich people got their money taken away, they've taken to doing nude protests and they like break into the studio and like, you know, start disrupting programs.
Oh,
but they're like actually rich people who are screaming that they want their money back kind of thing.
If you don't cut away, do you just see dicks?
You see pixels. But yeah, you can kind of make
I
out.
Want dick.
Yeah,
you can
make out some floppy parts if you really squint. But yeah, I think that the game is censored no matter what. I didn't look too much into it, sorry.
Gonna look for the hot coffee mod for this one.
I didn't even check to see if there's DLC. I failed this show. I'm sorry. I'll come back next week.
The only DLC that I see is the soundtrack.
Okay, yeah, it's a good soundtrack, too. But, yeah, no, I think this game is a buy it for anybody who has the 60 gigabytes to spare and the 40-something hours to, you know, plus some to, you know, get through all the content. There's a lot for you there, and I really do recommend this one. It was so much more than I thought it was going to be, so that's pretty cool.
Cool.
All right, finished the game in less than 40 hours?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, playthrough is, like, I think episode one was, like, I don't know, like, 1.5 to 2 hours.
Oh, okay. All right. There's just, like, a lot of stuff there if you want to keep mucking about.
Yeah, there's many different storylines, and depending on choices you make between episodes of the newscast will determine which episode you're going to watch. So, yeah,
gotcha.
That's about all I can say there.
That's fine.
Cool. Well, moving on, next game to talk about is Vagante, developed by Nuke9, published by Blitworks, released January 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. Vagante is an action-packed roguelike platformer set in a dark fantasy world filled with monsters, demons, and crooks. It features permanent death and procedurally generated levels. Despite these dangers, adventurers commonly travel these unforgiving lands questing for fame, riches, and power. Tim, did you find your fame, riches, and power?
Not all of them. No, I mean, that's a lot of stuff.
It is.
Yeah. It's a lot to get out of, you know, one weekend playing a game for review. It's a very high expectation. All right, yeah. So this game has existed on PC for quite a long time because it came out in early access quite a long time ago. And then eventually finally released like, I guess 4 years ago. It doesn't sound quite so recent anymore, does it? 2018 suddenly getting far away.
That is, whew.
Yeah,
in the before times.
Yet really anything before 2020 might as well be, you know, we all know we're all there right now. But yeah, now the game's getting a console release. And yeah, I guess the good news is this game was in early access for like 7 years and then out on PC for a while. So they had lots of time to refine it and polish it up and take feedback and make a solid game out of it, which they have. So what this game basically is Spelunky. If you're familiar with that game,
except
with fantasy trappings.
Nice.
That's the game.
Full sin.
Yeah, you pick a class at the beginning of the game. So when it starts out, you get like a warrior, rogue, and a wizard. You pick one. Something I appreciate is each class has different sprites you can choose from, which is nice just for the sake of variety, because you're going to be running down into them caves a lot. But yeah, the game follows that formula. You go into randomly generated maps. There's like four different biomes, as it were, made up of a few stages each. And they're completely randomly generated with traps and monsters and treasure and equipment for your character. And as you go, you gain experience. So when you clear a floor, you'll get the chance to rest at a bonfire. Don't know where they got that idea from. and level up your character a little bit before you proceed on to the next floor. But yeah, every, you know, you're finding weapons and potions and scrolls and magic spells and all kinds of different stuff. And some of it is immediately identified to you and some of it is not. So you can wait till you find something that will identify it, or you can drink the mystery juice and see what it does to you.
Yeah, my favorite experience with the whole mystery juice is I was fighting like a troll king or something. Mm-hmm. I just barely beat him. I had 12 hit points left. I had a potion. I took it, and I had 6 hit points left. So I halved my XP.
Yeah, it is risky business. But the cool thing is the game does give you a lot of flexibility. Like, you start out with those classes, but you're not really pigeonholed, because depending on like the equipment you find or the potions you find, you might start like specking your wizard in a more physical. Hey, sneeze, it's coming. Is it going away? It left. Nope. Oh, it went away. It was gonna be tremendous. Uh-huh. It'll be back later. Stay tuned.
Suspense is killing me.
Yeah, you're not stuck like, well, you know, oh, all I'm finding is a bunch of like, you know, strength based stuff for my wizard. No, it's like you could just start kind of pushing in that direction and make a character that has like a few spells in their back pocket, but can take a fight up close and personal if needed. The art for this game, just generally speaking, is just some tremendously fantastic pixel art. I feel like your characters and the monsters are like little smallish, like squat characters. But just like the environments look really nice and are really moody and detailed. The cave you're in, the starting area, is maybe a little bit too dark in some points, which I'll get to in a second. But for the most part, it just looks real good. So you'll go into a level, you'll explore. There's like lots of like mysterious, weird things like sitting around that you don't quite know what to do with, like Spelunky. You kind of got to figure it out. There's a shopkeeper you can piss off, like in Spelunky. Every level has, you know, you can find the exit, but every level has a boss. And if you beat that boss, you get a key that opens a big treasure chest somewhere in the level, which is generally the thing you want to do, because those chests always have like pretty good rewards in them. And I saw like a pretty decent variety of bosses of the boss. It's not always like the first level has the same guy or the second level has the same one. Like there's a good variety to them too. But anyways, so as you play through and you succeed and fail 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 a lot more than you succeed, you will get some like kind of global experience, which fills a meter, which unlocks stuff. initially, you're unlocking, you can unlock more classes. There's like different music and there's some other, most of what you're unlocking is different selectable backgrounds for your character that will give you different bonuses or penalties as you start out your run. So you might get more health for this, or the first one you get gives you a bonus level at the detriment to some of your other stats. It's called it being experienced. So your character is older and wiser, but they're not quite as, I think it gives you a penalty to your dexterity or something like that. So, but it's nice because it gives you more ways to spice up your play as you're grinding your way through. So it never, it's a grind. You're going through the same area. You're seeing a lot of the same-ish enemies over time. Not every run is going to give you great stuff, but you right off the bat, you have different characters, classes to pick through, and then it starts folding on different backgrounds to choose from to help spice things up. So it's cool. It's welcome. It keeps things interesting as you go into the game. It is tough for sure. The game is advertised as tough but fair, which I think is mostly true. They have these fucking boulders that'll fall on your head. And in that aforementioned dark cave area, man, it's sometimes tough to see those things and they just fall on you and kill you. There was one time I spawned in, walked two steps, and one fell on my fucking head. And I'm just like, well, that's great, guy. That's just great.
I had one close to that, but I got like, I don't know, 10 seconds into the run before I got crushed by a boulder.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, whatever, guys. But sometimes, I mean, genuinely, I felt it was tough for me to spot the boulder that was going to fall sometimes. And that's the idea. It's supposed to be tricky. It has arrow traps, which are generally pretty easy to see. There's these like plant monsters that will like be laying down like flat on a tile, and then if you step on it, they pop up and hurt you, and they can kind of, you really got to be looking out for them because they can really just blend in and look like moss. But moss is bad. Moss will try to kill you. That's it. That's the game. It's not as speedy as Spelunky is. Spelunky is a pretty fast game. This is more methodical. I felt, well, at least the play style I chose, I guess I'll say was more methodical in taking my time. But that's, consequence of starting it out, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the game is $14.99. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, if that sounded awesome to you, this game is probably going to be super worth it, and you're going to get a lot out of it. Just grinding and finding the game's secrets and trying out the different classes and trying to get your way to the end.
Cool, sounds good. All right, you got one other game to kind of talk about.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot about this.
next up is a quote-unquote preview of Torchlight Infinite's closed beta, published by XD Network. Closed beta is available on iOS and Android. Crawl through countless dungeons, go through infinite combinations of gear, and customize the perfect hero to combat the Ember. Lunatics Unleashed. Tim, how unleashed were you?
I did not get off the leash at all. I am still on the leash. The process of trying to get into this game's beta involved like loading, a third party, not in the Play Store, game client onto my phone, and then signing, pre-registering for the beta with some information that they provided us. And I don't know, it just didn't fucking work. It just refused to allow me access to actually start playing. It was just like, oh, cool, we got your pre-registration, we'll let you know. I'm like, well, wait, no, this was supposed to be the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, did you hear anything? Did anything ever follow up on that? Or did
I got nothing. So
nothing.
I don't know. It was weird.
I tried contacting them on the Keymailer site that we got it through, and all they asked was to make sure that you were in the U.S., and you are.
Yeah, oh. Here I am. So yeah, I don't know what went askew there.
Game looks cool though. I saw some video of it. Game looks fast paced, looks really cool. I'm glad it's coming to PC because I have zero interest in playing this on a phone.
What, you don't have a phone?
Oh, I do have a phone to ignore games on.
Yeah, the joke is that they're like trying to beat the Diablo Immortal game that was announced like 5 years ago to market on the phones.
Yeah.
As a good action RPG. So
you said you looked at it on your, you said you looked at like video of it or something in motion, like compared to like say Torchlight 2 or 3, you think, you're saying it's more frenetic and quicker?
I can't really compare it because it's based on a phone engine. Like I haven't played Torchlight 3 in a while. First off, it's been like my memory sucks. The footage, it looks like any kind of fast-paced dungeon crawling Diablo-ish, Torchlight-ish, Grim Dawn-ish like action RPG. It just
ish.
Yeah, it looks standard. It didn't look like it was doing anything super magical or super special.
Even the sorcerer?
All I did was see a trailer, man.
Yes, the sorcerer has magic.
Yeah, it's sorcerer, isn't?
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like one of those games. Like there's big buttons on the right, the lower right hand side for hitting with your big fat thumbs. Trying to mimic, and there's a dial on the left for maneuvering your character around. So it's that kind of control on the phone.
Yeah, hopefully they hear this and they could get in touch with us and let us know how we could actually get access to the beta, or like make a more simplified method, like give us a code for the beta instead of a login and whatever.
If they do it on PC, that'll probably be a lot smoother of a.
Unfortunately, it's a mobile only beta for now.
Yep.
We will have to wait. Oh, well. And hopefully when the PC release is closer, we'll hear again and we'll get to take an actual in-depth look at this one. But that's it for you, Tim.
Yeah, that's it for me. Bedtime. Night and night.
Good night, Tim. I'm going to buy a Vagante. What was that?
Vagante. Yep.
Yeah, Vagante.
Or both.
What?
Wait, what? For now, I think you cut out.
I was saying, or salsa picante.
Ooh, I think he was making a joke.
Too. I'm going to buy that, too. I'm not joking. I'm going to have it.
You should buy that. It's delicious and fun.
Oh, yeah. I got this on my wish list.
You're already interested.
There you go. Everyone wants Vagante. No one can play Torchlight. And then we got more games to talk about. So, Tim, we'll let you get going. Do you have any final words?
Good night. Nope.
Cool. Next game is Unforeseen Incidents, developed by Backwoods Entertainment, published by Ash Games, released January 27th on the Switch for $19.99. Unforeseen Incidents is a classical-style interactive mystery set in a beautifully hand-painted world. Join Harper Pendrell and experience a challenging investigation, smart dialogue, and a rich cast of characters in this thrilling new adventure game. Brooke, tell us about your time with Unforeseen Incidents.
Oh, man. So this game is dope. I loved it so much. Before I get into how much I love it, going to subject y'all to a really quick story time here. A few shows ago, we briefly talked about some of our different histories with gaming. I'd love to go into that more sometime, by the way, learn how each of us came up in gaming, like what consoles we played growing up, what we had access to, what we didn't have access to. I hope we can all talk about that more in the future sometime. But a few shows ago, I mentioned that in one house I was in growing up, I had access to a Sega Genesis for a few years with only two games, and those games are Sonic 2 and Echo 2. So that's all I played for a super long time. Next house I was in, we had a Super Nintendo, and the Sega just was gone, and I only had two games that I could play, and it was Super Mario World and Street Fighter 2. So once again, I played only those just endlessly. And that's kind of how it was until I was a teen, got my first job, started buying myself games and a Game Boy, except for one beautiful summer, I had access to a computer and one of those 300 game discs. Do y'all know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. Shareware discs.
Oh yeah. It had 300 games on it. I don't even know anything else about that except it blew my little mind. I spent so much time coveting games and wishing I could try more and being jealous of what my friends could play. And suddenly I had 300 games. And when you're a kid that young, it's just really excited to play anything. Like, my heart's like beating faster remembering like the rush of having all those games available to me. It blew my mind, made me the woman I am today, et cetera, et cetera. While I have my hands on that disc, I played all kinds of stuff I never dreamed I was going to play that I wasn't even ready for, that my friends didn't even know about. Wolfenstein 3D, all the old DOS games like Trouble with Twibbles, whatever they call it, Crystal Caves, Commander Keen, a game that I can't remember the name of now, which is really funny because Chris spent several days last year trying to help me remember the Sorcerers something or other. Anyway,
yeah,
let's something like that. But
Sorcerish.
Sorcerer's Apprentice or something. Okay, we're gonna come back to that. Maybe the most enchanting of all games on that disc for me, out of all 300 games, was Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. Did anybody play that here?
I did not know.
I actually have it by way of the Wii Indiana Jones game. It's hidden in there as an Easter egg.
Really?
Whoa.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome. Oh, my God. That just blew my mind. Okay, but if you have friends who played this game growing up, it was just so ahead of its time. It's really funny. It's just an awesome, like, open world environment to explore in, like, a point-and-click atmosphere. That game was an insane experience for me. I loved it. I was already an Indiana Jones fan as a kid, so it just blew my mind. Anybody who grew up playing that remembers how awesome it was, how ahead of its time it was. And ever since then, no point-and-click mystery game has been able to top that experience for me. And I figured maybe it's a Halo Effect type of deal. Maybe it's because like it was the first one I ever played and I just loved it. But nothing's been able to hold a candle to that game for me in that genre of point-and-click classic mystery until now. This game might take the cake for me. Dude, Joe, I've been waiting for this game, for the show to happen, to tell you this is my favorite game you gave me so far. I can't say that I like it better than Indiana Jones, because I probably need to just play that again. And I don't want to be hasty here. That is a real classic, and people who grew up playing that will, like, fight you if you try to say another point-and-click is better. But this is just right up there for me instantly with the best point-and-click game. My Monkey Island head friends here are going to kill me, but I already think it's just a better game than that whole franchise. And what's so magical about a really good, like, breakout quality point-and-click game, if you tuned in last week and you were like, thank God Brooke and Chris are rating that cat game high enough because this game's, like, all I can really play or figure out, like, you could play this game. It's not isolating. There's an almost non-existent learning curve. But that being said, you get in there, you don't have to like have any prior gaming knowledge, but you will learn a lot. I learned a lot in this game. Don't pour organic coolant in a copper brass radiator for one. But you can. I'm looking at my notes here that I took while I was playing the game. But you can use pantyhose as a belt in the car engine. I don't remember what part that was. But long story short, we got there. I fixed that car. And I was well on my way to stealing that blood sample from that evil laboratory. And that was only the beginning. This game was awesome. And you just got a lot of really smart, immersive choices that the studio made. You're playing as like a nerdy smartass who's definitely not always the coolest guy in the room, but who's like has a lot of jokes and stuff, which I think is always like a good narrator player character when you're playing a game with lots of role-playing dialogue choices. And this game has a lot of dialogue choices. I think it's really set apart from others in the genre too. You know, it's letting you play the nice guy or the shitty guy with your choices without that really breaking whatever built-in character we have going on here. Like Geralt in Witcher is a great example of that. He's a good example of a game company making that sort of personality type work for them as a player character without taking you out of it at all and really putting you more into it, even though it is a specific character. And Harper, the character you play as, he's all too real. He's got a trash apartment. He's got two pairs of pants. He's got a soldering iron, a ham radio, and his windows are like boarded up so he can sleep during the day. And I'm already like, dude, this guy's me. Like, I'm loving it. Very relatable. He's an awesome character, but he's flawed. I love that. And just that sort of character really adds a lot of natural comic relief to an already really well-written game with amazing, super well-developed characters, not just the narrator or your player character. I mean, I could just like, I actually had a longer review and I scrapped parts of it because I don't want to take too long. I just can't say enough good things about this game. It's got killer art, mad style, comic-y looking a little, but like in a really cool artsy, almost Calvin Knobs type way. So, so, so stylish. Like with Joe's intro here with the beautifully hand-painted backgrounds, like that doesn't even do it justice. Like Google pictures of this game's backgrounds and the characters. It's so good. It's really just kind of my thing too. I really love this art style. This game's got impeccable taste, awesome soundtrack and soundscaping. Like while I was playing it, my partner was like overhearing it from the other side of the room saying, oh, this is a really good song. Oh, this is a really good track. amazing voice actors, some of my favorite voice actors of like any game I've played like this. And the story just rules. It's really smart and good, funny, super interesting. It just works a lot better mechanically than a lot of point-and-click mystery games, too. It feels super real and natural for what it is. But more than anything, I do love the writing in this game. It really took me out of my life, put me into another life this weekend. And that is just like, it just made me so happy. That's what makes games like high art to me. It takes you out of your problems, puts you in a good mood, puts you in a new world, and you're just so pumped to play the rest of it. You can't wait to see what happens. That's the ultimate game experience for me. And this game definitely gave that to me this weekend. That's what you want. Joe, I've been so pumped to tell you this is my favorite game you've given me yet. I know previously the game I said that had that spot for me on this show was Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1, Frogwares. If y'all are somehow listening to this, I still love y'all. There's enough book to go around. And I'm not saying the game is better than Sherlock because they're totally different, but this was just my thing, man. This just really hit the spot. This is my shit. Love this game.
Well, it's $20. Do I even need to ask what your verdict is?
Oh, my God. Joe, I've got it in my notes where I'm like, this is a buy it unless Joe says this is a $100 game. But even then, like, I think for me, it would still be a buy it. This is like, this is not just a buy it for me. This is my first, like, I'm shaking you by your shoulders and being like, buy it. And I'm like freaking you out. And you're like, calm down. I had such a good time with this game. I'm gonna say it. Hold on. Let me try to get my voice down.
Unique.
Try to get it out there. I've been practicing that for this show. This game was excellent. I had a blast, dude. And Joe, I told you I had a shitty week, and this game, like, it made it a better week for me, and that's what it's all about. That is what it's about.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you had a good time with it. If people are interested in it and you don't have a Switch, it is available on Steam. It's $20 on there as well. The soundtrack is available on there for $3. So you could grab that and or pick it up on the Switch.
Going on my wish list.
There you go. Well, Chris, you're up next because we got a game to talk about called About an Elf. You excited for this one?
Not as excited as Brooke is about unforeseen incidents. So we're going to have to bring the energy down a little bit for this one.
I don't know if we can. About an Elf, developed and published by Meringue Interactive, released February 10th on the Switch for $11.99. Join forces with Dom, the magical princess of all elves, and her incorrigible apprentice, Roland the Brave Cat, as they fight to save the universe from the King of Terrors and his army of evil monsters. This is a point-and-click-ish, RPG-ish, visual novel-ish game of gigantic awesome proportions. Do you have what it takes? If so, everything might just turn out elf okay.
Oh my god.
Okay, so this game is this falls into one of my favorite recent genres, and that is the unapologetically weird kind of like half broken, just absolute absurdity made with love and delivered at a low price point.
Yeah, this game, just looking at the screenshots, it's the epitome of what the fuck.
Exactly. It's a very what the fuck styled game. It is basically a point and click kind of at its core. So what it is that you're basically, I actually thought it was Princess Dam because I was just like, damn, princess, calm down.
It might be Dam. I didn't.
It could be Dom. I don't know.
Dame.
Like, I did find myself many times in this game issuing a firm, settle down, Dam. Or settle down, damn. That's what I meant. That's how I meant to inflect that. I'm not good with my voice. Anyway, so what's going on here is that the self-proclaimed princess of all elves is talking to, I don't know, it's like this girl with this giant lemon lollipop that isn't really explained, but she is basically hitting this girl up for gummy bears, bringing it back around to gummy bears. And gummy bears are a kind of currency in this game, but they're also like a treat for our elfin lady. And so in exchange, she offers to tell the most amazing story, like her life story, basically, in the most amazing way possible, as in order to earn gummy bears from this person who has a job. And so what the game is you are playing through the story that she's telling. Therefore your choices just affect the narration. Basically it's a symbiotic relationship. So if you fail, it's part of the story. If you win, it's part of the story. So the story is about how all the elves disappeared, and it was up to her and her acquired feline acquaintance, Roland the Cat, which, by the way, I'm a huge Warren Zevon fan, and every time I see Roland, I'm like, Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner, which is a great song. Everybody listen to it. Anyway.
Well, it's not just a cat. It's the Brave Cat.
The Brave Cat, yes. Who, he is brave. He actually will go into danger, and that's fine. So it's about like her basically interacting with the world, and the world is bizarre. It's like, again, this strange, absurd universe that has plexi, different things like a grass plexus, a water plexus, and the plexi, they're basically levels. Uh-huh. And every time when you go to one, there are buildings to interact with, and literally it's just touchscreen or cursor and, you know, just clicking on something to interact with it. And it either will become dialogue, she can get an item that may come in handy later, and some of them are pretty great. At one point, she gets an empty bottle. She buys it, quote unquote. And it's like, you got an empty bottle. And then she trades the empty bottle to somebody else who promises to fill it with a magical liquid at a later time. And so she trades her empty bottle for a bottle full of empty promises. And it's the same bottle. So it's like, it's things like that happen. And it's like, you don't know if it has a use in the game or if it's just being funny. It's one of those kind of games where you just don't know. Sometimes you'll run into battles, and the battles are just straight up like, so she uses Magiballs to defeat enemies, and you have your choice, well, initially between three of them, and it just gives you this very brief hint, like showing you a picture of something, and based on that picture, you're supposed to guess if it's a fire, water, or electric ball that will work. If you choose poorly, then the narration says that you lost, but you get another chance to tell the story, but at the cost of a gummy bear. So that's kind of how that goes. And so it's about reading like these kind of abstract hints, but that's the only challenge in the game. The rest of it is just clicking on everything and talking to everybody and enjoying this kind of the visual novelish style of the game and like kind of reading it. And the way it's written very much reminds me, actually, one of my best friends back in the early aughts was somebody who would write like actual novels like for NaNoWriMo or whatever, but publish them through Facebook and using all of the like, you know, awesome-tastic type language that everybody was using in the like 2000s or so, just to where it's like this whole other language of like portmanteau and like internetisms and just like, you know, manic pixie type language that you see again on the internet, which has taken many forms throughout the years. But this game is full of that. It's extremely like, you know, It's extremely internet casual, like the language of the entire game. And again, internet it's being
casual.
Told, yeah, it's being told by an insane person. So that's, you know, that it checks out. So that's really cool. Like the writing style is genuinely funny and at times absurd, but it's often broken up by poetry that's actually genuinely pretty good. Don't ask me why, but like there is a core of like sincerity in this, which is always like a winning point for me. The main thing that I praise about this game is the art style. The art is done entirely in photographs that are slightly, I don't know what the word is, but it's where you take several photos of like a still image and then you basically animate them to where the image is still but rotating. So characters are photo quality, but they're actually animated to rotate back and forth ever so slightly. So they have this like 3D realistic feel to them. And it's very, very high def. So it's kind of like they're very clear looking like pictures. It's not quite stop motion. Like I said, it's a different type of thing. It's kind of like when, it's also not stereoscopic. It's just like this thing where, again, if you take like three pictures of something at the exact same time and then flip the pictures like back and forth, where it's a still image, but it's the exact same still image, but it's like, you know, let's call it like pseudo Matrix style, but it doesn't rotate all the way around. It only rotates like a quarter of a degree. It's hard to describe, but when you see it in the game, it gives the game like this nice liveliness. Like, and also the actress that they got to play the elf, like every time her dialogue changes, her pose changes, and it's just still images that change, just like a visual novel. But like all her poses are so fun, and like all the characters have like all these really fun poses, and like, I don't know. And again, the enemies are mostly toys, like just blown up to the size of, you know, humans because of photography. And so, like, you know, you're basically like, it's this very fun looking actress, like, versus these, you know, porcelain dolls kind of thing. So, or broccoli with human faces, and that insist that they are not ancient, all knowing broccoli. They're just standard broccoli. But they will bullshit you some wisdom just because she keeps insisting that they are actually learned. It's funny stuff like that.
This
so yeah,
sounds it, ridiculous.
It is utterly ridiculous, but in the best way. There you go.
Cool. Well, it is $12. What are your thoughts?
Again, I really think everybody should experience this one. You know, I'm going to go ahead and throw out the U word, unique.
Two games in a row get unique.
Dang.
I know.
Everybody in that Twitch room better be fucked up right now. I see y'all saying to take a drink every time Spice says unique.
I just got water right now.
Yeah, and this one is only 1.5 gigs, so you don't have to spend 60 gig on this one.
Yeah, exactly. And you won't be able to on your Switch, so. I don't know. I guess 1.5 gigs on a Switch's internal memory is more real estate than 60 gigs on a standard computer.
True.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
Then again, it could be like NBA 2K22, which takes up a whopping 47 gig on your Switch.
Incredible. I knew 2K19, because I have it. It's 32 gigs, but wow.
47 for a Switch game. 47 gig for a Switch game.
Amazing. So this is worth at least 1/20th of an NBA 2K22. So go ahead and get it. Yeah.
All right. Next up is Paper Dolls Original, developed and published by Winking Skywalker Entertainment Limited, released June 2019 on the PS4 for $19.99. And we're covering this one because we'll be covering the new one next week on the show. But Paper Dolls Original is a first-person horror game with a hint of Asian culture. The story begins with a man driving his daughter to his estranged wife's house. On the road, this man, tortured by depression, was deeply immersed in his past memories. Suddenly, his car crashed and he lost consciousness. When the man woke up, he found himself daughterless in a deserted ancient Chinese house. Brooke, what's going on in Paper Dolls Original?
That's a really good question. And that's kind of what they're doing. They want you to be like, what the heck is going on? This is a really pretty, really well-made first-person escape roomy mystery jump scare type horror game. I just threw on like every adjective I could think of for this game. Sweet. It's got a lot going for it. It's got some incredible art in this game. As far as being spoopy, I was spooped. This game is very scary. It opens up. There's been this horrible car crash, as Joe described. You can't see straight. You're stumbling around, and your baby daughter is like, oh, no, Daddy, you didn't take your pills today. And you're like, damn, am I crazy? And it just gets scarier from there. You're then, for some reason, exploring a haunted mansion. It's time to pick up some different objects, try to make those objects interact with other objects in the rooms that you're in, and explore around so you can even find out what is going on. Why am I here? Is this a Chinese ghost? And where is my daughter anyway? She was here just a second ago.
Great damn kids.
These damn kids, they always walking around in mansions, dude. I don't know. It's kind of great game for what it is. This is clearly a really well done escape roomy type game. A lot of cool Chinese cultural horror elements and lore weaved into it. There's some really high quality atmospheric art and 3D animation going on here. This is probably like one of the prettiest like first-person horror games that I've seen. This game could not have been cheap to make. It even has combat that is pretty forgiving in the learning curve there, which y'all know I always appreciate. It's almost got like a Telltale Games thing going on where it kind of tells you what button you need to be pushing and how many times, first couple combats, etc. I do have one big issue with this game, and that's that it's unfortunately, in my opinion, really poorly localized. Like, I doubt there was even one native English speaker on the localization or editing team for the American release of this game. It just really doesn't work language-wise in a lot of spots, and I've played a lot of Chinese games, so I feel like I have a really good range of what could happen there. And I know that, you know, unforeseen the game I was talking about a little bit ago, that's actually a German game, and I was really surprised. And I know it's easier to localize something from German to American English than it would be for Chinese Mandarin to American English. The localization errors are not game-breaking. You'll still be able to figure things out and get out of the room you're in, get through combat and stuff. I sure figured it out, and if I can figure it out, anybody can. But it's kind of a shame because the rest of the production of this game is clearly so lovingly done and almost masterfully made. I don't think I'm being insensitive or unrealistic here in what I'm saying. I actually volunteered helping localize and edit the English release for a Chinese Atome game called Lost in Secular Love, where you get to date your choice of three monks. Would love to talk about that game sometime. Super cool game. That's cool. So I know it's a cool game too. And this is definitely a higher budget game than that, 100 times over. I know it's not cheap to make games. I know every part of making games costs money, but I wish the company that had done something similar to what the company that did Lost in Secular Love did, Yedu Game. They let a bunch of American English speaking volunteers, and not that many, help out with the release. They didn't pay them. They just let them volunteer. And that's what I did a few years ago. I think if they even had one native English speaker working on the script, it would have taken a game that's super highly rated. I took a peek in how this is received in China, so I can kind of put it into perspective before writing my review here. That would have just finished it off to make it more of a complete and professional level piece, because it's kind of all it's missing. So I just thought that was a little bit of a shame. But tune in next week. I do have Paper Dolls 2 to review. I promise I'm going to go into it fresh start with a super open mind about any localization or translation, and I won't let this part of the review color my review for that game in any way. I do think overall this is a good game, and I think Aki would like it. I'm also still getting to know Aki, so I'm open to be told if I'm wrong if this drops for Xbox, but I immediately was like, oh, this is a really good horror game, and it's I could compare it to other games that Aki had mentioned she liked too. I think it's really good for what it is.
Well, the game is $16.99. I originally said it was $19.99, but upon checking the store page, it appears to be $16.99. So what are your thoughts on the game for $17?
I know I said a couple maybe borderline harsh things about localization, but I do still think this is a buy it for people who are really into first-person horror games like this. For everyone else, I think this is a solid bucket why not, because, you know, that may not even be my all-time favorite genre of game, but I still thought this was a really cool game. I think there's a lot to love there.
You think it's cheap enough to warrant a fuck it, why not? Fuck it, why not? We usually say for like the $5, $6, $7 range.
Yeah, I think, you know, I didn't know that for the rating system here.
Yeah, it's cheap enough that fuck it, why not, right?
Yeah, okay. If I think about it like that, I might say if you're not already an established fan of the genre, I'm going to amend that and say, wait till it's on sale, maybe if it's $7 or $10.
And then it's a fuck it, why not?
All right. Okay, I'll stand behind that.
That works. All right, we got one more game to talk about tonight. That is called Cake Invaders, developed by Zoo Corporation and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft. Released January 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $5.99. The Japanese just love their famous German-inspired Baumkuchen cakes. What? I don't know this word, Baumkuchen cakes.
I've heard it so much, it's a cliche at this point.
Oh, my Lord. And hungry invaders from across the universe have discovered these delicious treats, too. Are you up to the challenge of protecting these precious desserts from waves of alien attacks? Ernell, tell us about your time with Cake Invaders.
That's first. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So about that cake. So Cake Invaders is honestly a rarity these days for reviews I get, which isn't so bad. That's kind of nifty. It's a very quick, it's not too rare, quick pick up and play type game. The idea, the best way to describe it is essentially Defender, like a new version of Defender, a type of game similar to Defender. In it, you are a little astro woman, girl, person with a rail gun. It's pretty cool. Or her chain gun. Weird stuff. And you are standing atop a cake with bumps. It's about 6 or 7 to be exact. And the game takes place over a series of rounds where in each round, aliens are descending from the heavens or top of the screen, your preference, and they are attempting to destroy your cake. Your ways of defending the cake is to shoot them. That's all. That's all you need to do. Blow them up. There's no maneuvering per se in the game. Your character is stationary, but you can move a cursor on the screen to determine where your gunfire is going to be placed before you hit the button, and is going. Now, the way the cursor works is you can move the cursor however you want, but as far as aiming the gun is concerned, when the cursor goes, the little gun girl has to actually move the gun in an arc fashion till it's pointing at the place where the actual target marker is located. Now, it's interesting because at the beginning of this game, it's really freaking hard. You have one girl with a gun, and aliens are coming at you from all sides. Like it doesn't ramp up. It starts out with a decent-sized wave of enemies coming at you. And I honestly felt like most of the time, I lost most of my cake in like the first or second rounds of the game. Anybody who can pull it off and not lose their cake, you're a champion. But things change when you get a few power-ups, most specifically one that I'll mention shortly. As you're playing the game, a little colorful orb will fly around the screen on occasion. And when you see it, you want to blow it up as fast as you can. Because when you destroy it, you'll get one of a few power-ups that you can use to make your experience a little bit better. You'll get limited rounds of ammunition, such as lasers, which can pierce enemies multiples at one shot. There's explosive rounds that when they hit, they blow up and destroy things in their vicinity. I hardly noticed too much use for these as far as like being special, mainly because your gun fires fairly quickly and up to the point where I didn't care so much. It was like, they're all dying. Who cares? But then there are a few augmentation power-ups. There's one that increases your rate of fire. There's one that places a temporary shield atop, well, not even temporary, it's like a shield over top one of your bunt cake things, so it gives you like one hit before it gets destroyed. And then quite possibly the most important power-up in the game, another gunner. As you find the additional gunner power-ups, one more girl with a gun will plop up and start opening fire on aliens. All the girls aim at the same cursor. You only manipulate one cursor. So what ends up happening is you have a girl on the left side of the screen, a girl on the right side of the screen. If you put the cursor in the middle, crossfire occurs where bullets go from the left to the right and from the right to the left. You can get a lot of girls. You can get up to like six that I've gotten to anyway. And once you start getting a certain amount, it's just a wave of gunfire just splashing the screen. You move the cursor, it's like a fan. It's like draping. And what ends up usually happening is as long as I get to like round three with at least one piece of cake left, that's all I need because I can just go bonkers. My first round, I got to like level like 30, like wave like 27. And second game, I got to like the 30s. And then I just stopped. Not because I didn't like the game or nothing, but just because I was like, okay, well, I think I've tapped this for the purpose at this point because I feel like I got the gist of the game. But essentially, once you start getting a number of girls, like enemies will start getting a little faster. You'll see more enemies come up at one time, but you're still just spraying things. And if you have just the one hump of cake there, the enemies that are on the screen have to hit that very specific piece of cake. So if a bullet drops on the right side of the screen, but that bump's already been destroyed, you don't have to care. It's only the one that still remains that has to be hit to lose. So you have like six, seven girls spraying bullets to protect one piece of cake, and the odds are in your favor. So it's interesting in that regard. The game, it's not easy, because like I said, it does get faster, but it's almost like the best way to describe it, I guess, is like how Tetris works. For those who play like the classic Tetris, or even better, Tetris DX, Tetris DS. The game ramps up in difficulty bit by bit by bit, but then eventually the game's difficulty maxes out. Now, it's hard at that point, yes, but if you've gotten to the point where you're good at Tetris and the difficulty can't go beyond that point, you can play that game forever. I've had sessions of Tetris DS where I had to put the game to sleep and come back to it because it's like Lumines in that regard. Like you mastered the game, essentially. I feel like Cake Invaders has that predicament too. And that's verifiable when you look at the high scores, because that's like the one big thing the game has too. It's like a high scoreboard that you can use to compare to other people around the world. And when you see the high scores people have on that thing, those are people who got to the point where it was like, I'll just never die. And their scores show it. Insane scores.
Yeah, I got to like level 15 or so, and I stopped playing because I was like, all right, I'm not going to die. I got all the achievements already, because it's one of those games where you could get all the achievements in like 15, 20 minutes if you really want.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, at that point, you're like, you're going for like improvements and getting better scores. It's like, usually you want more to happen.
Yeah.
In order to feel like you're doing more, doing better. But do you agree with me in the sense that, like, you see pretty much every enemy around, like, wave, like, 10 or 12, like the gold flying ship that drops the heat-seeking bombs?
Yeah.
So I was like, this game needed more. Like, as it is, like, it wasn't boring or anything. It's cute, and the music is only, like, two tracks that play, but they're not bad tracks. But
it's like your thoughts with Kind Duo last week, where you enjoyed it, you just wish there was more of it.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Because I was like, by the time I stopped playing on that second round, I was like, I have no reason to really come back to this. Like, I don't feel compelled to want to do more of this. And I feel weird saying that, though. And I say that because the original Defender, which, I mean, it's a low bar, I'll admit, it's freaking Defender. But the original Defender, it was always lasers and, like, rocks. Like, there was no crazy stream of, like, advancing new enemies and new power-ups. It was just, this is the game, and it gets faster. But I feel like in 2022, they could at least have, like, more enemies or more something to change the flow up to make you feel like this is where it gets different, or this is where something changes. Maybe even a few more different types of, like, bonus rounds, like every five levels, so you'll get, like, gold enemies approaching, and, like, these little gold flying things come up, which I guess are just worth more points. I never really quite picked up what made them special. I just blew them up because, hey, guns! but aside from that, that was, like, the only bonusy thing I saw that would change the flow of the levels. Beyond that, it was just, like, more of the same every single time. No. So I could see this being fun for, like, a quick pickup, to get, like, those few rounds out to go, hey, he's like Defender.
I still don't see the Defender comparison. I think it's more like Missile Command.
That's Missile Command. Missile Command is the one where it's like the turret, and you fire, like, the laser up into the sky to destroy the debris that's coming down, right?
Yeah, but Defender's the ship, and it's side-scrolling, and you have to pick up the humans as the aliens.
Gold. And that's the one that's comparable to WrestleGun, which is kind of like that, but it's more frantic.
Yeah.
Damn it. All right, Missile Command. And the point is, and thank you, I appreciate that, because honestly, I don't want to give people a wrong comparison. It's like Missile Command. I wish they did more to improve it and update it for 2022.
Yeah, just go back, re-listen to the entire review, and swap out every instance of Defender with Missile Command, and then everything will make sense.
Except for the one where we're actually talking about Defender.
Yeah. That's what happens when you drink cherry vanilla Captain Morgan. Damn it.
Wow. No, the game is $6. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to give it a try because I do feel like I got fun out of what I played of it. It just didn't have longevity, and the game is cheap. So
yeah, this is why I think we have a fuck it, why not rating, because it's only $6. Launch, I believe it's actually like 10% off, something like that. So you could get it 10-20% off, get it a few bucks cheaper. It's a 15-20 minute pick up, play, get all the achievements and move on from. And I don't regret spending $6 on it. So that's my thought on it because I paid for the game.
In that case, then, what do you think of Defender?
I think it's old as fuck, and so are we.
Oh yeah. Now what I want is someone listening to this episode, do a revival of Moon Patrol. And I say that knowing what Moon Patrol is, not getting it confused with another game. Do Moon Patrol. Because God, I'd still play the shit out of that right now. Yes. That game got progressively harder. I ramble a lot. Point is,
that's the end of this episode. We made it through another one.
I love that moment of introspection there.
Yeah, just a small moment of just thought, like, of, are we still doing this? Yes, we are. Fuck. thanks to all you for being here, hanging out, keeping us company. Thanks to Tim for being here, doing his thing.
Thank you, Tim.
And does anyone have any final words to end the show before we play some music?
Your Defenders and your Missile Commands and your Moon Patrols and your Galagas, keep them correct. Because, oh, Joel, get you.